Hold on one second, guys.
Para continuar en español, oprima el 2 ahora.
The phone just rang.
We're calling to let you know that a technician will arrive at your location between 12:50 p.m. and 1:20 p.m. Will that new arrival time work for you?
Yes.
Great. We'll see you then. And remember, you must have your landlord's permission before the tech arrives, and an adult must be present during the scheduled appointment to ensure the safety of your pet.
I can hang up. Hold on one second. I have to tell. Wait. Let me start playing the music, and then I'll go tell Ron. He's up there to receive the cable guy. But let me start playing the music. So this is Xavier Rudd, Follow the Sun. Great song. Here we go. Which way the wind blows when this day is done. Great song, huh? All right. So first of all, I just want to say, is she still here? Yeah. Way to go, Anne. Like, yes, you hit a home run, in my humble opinion. That's what I'm looking for. That's the kind of teaching that wakes us up. That's like dyad on steroids. So keep doing that. And, you know, if you want, you could write to Ken and give him a new name for your program so it doesn't look like you're continuing to teach from that book, unless you think you're going to continue to teach from the book. But what you did today was just brilliant. So thank you. And, of course, as Ann knows, I was listening the whole time. I was listening on the radio at first because I was driving home from the dog park. And then I shifted over, of course, to the computer when I got home. Oh, and Cheryl's saying she just changed her title a few minutes ago. Good, 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 good. You know, I can't listen to everyone because, as you guys know, I also have work to do. But I'm thrilled that you're doing this. Like I said, this is the kind of teaching that will wake you up. It really will. You will be amazed over time what happens when you come in and teach with honesty and sincerity about your own process. Fabulous. So thank you. All right. So I am sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I'm on page 29. Starting with question number 27. As Cheryl is saying, now it's time to let go of the training wheels and soar. You know what? Before I go into Ramana Maharshi, I'm just going to lay him aside a second. I want to tell you guys a story. Although, you know, if you really kind of look at my life long term, there were, you know, false starts and then stepping away from the spiritual path many, many times my entire life. But when I really put my wheels to the spiritual path and started and never left again, was April of 2004. And that was the day that I began the Course in Miracles workbook. I had just finished reading, if you heard me the other day somewhere, I don't remember where I was, might have been right here, might have been Seven Steps. But I was talking about how the first thing I read in April of 2004 was the Manual for Teachers. Because the Manual for Teachers was little, and I didn't want to commit to that humongous text or that, you know, 365-day workbook. So I read the Manual for Teachers first. But after I read the Manual for Teachers, I was ready for a commitment. And so on a Disney cruise with Jasmine and my dad and my stepmom, I began the course. I began reading the text, and I began with workbook lesson one. You might have heard this part of the story before, but I'm going to just tell the whole story anyway. That day before I started the course, because I was now making a commitment, I felt like saying a prayer. So, you know, I got down on my knees, you know, in the traditional prayer position next to the bed in the stateroom on the cruise. And I started to pray, and I don't remember what I was praying. You know, I was praying my own prayer. And somewhere during that prayer, it was like something came down over me and took me over. And I began praying its prayer. And what I heard myself say was, I will learn anything you want me to learn. I will do anything you want me to do. Just make me useful for the rest of my life. And then I started the course. But it's like everything changed then. About 2 months later, while contemplating course lessons, I started having visions that were coming to deepen my understanding and clarity of the lesson I was on. And then in November of 2004, one day while I was meditating on the course lesson of the day, I had a vision, which by now they had actually become commonplace for me. I was accustomed to it. But this vision was different because, again, usually the visions came in order to teach me the lesson that I was on. And this vision was different. This vision was a calling, kind of like part two to whatever it was that came down on me when I was praying on that Disney cruise. This was like part two. And again, you may have heard this story before too, but in the vision, I was in a cavern, a deep, deep, dark cavern. And it was very, very dark. So dark, you know, like it is in a cave when there are no lights. You can't even see your hand in front of your face if the lights are out. And there were a lot of other people down in that cavern with me. And I knew that there were several ways to get out of the cavern, several tunnels that led out, up and out. But nobody could find them because it was so dark. And so I was standing there with an armful of lit candles. And people would come up to me and I would hand them a candle. And they would then take the candle themselves. Listen to this. I would hand them a candle. But they would take the candle themselves, and from the light of that candle, they would go off on their own. And they would find their own way out of the cavern. Now, when that vision ended, I didn't really know exactly what it meant, but I absolutely knew it was a calling. And I also absolutely knew I didn't want my thinking mind getting involved in figuring out what it meant. So this is when I went to the keyboard for the first time in my life and said, whatever you're trying to tell me, please just tell me so that I understand. And this story is in the beginning of NTI, by the way. I have NTI upstairs, or I would just, oh, wait, here's another NTI. Hey, imagine that. I have two. Let me just read when I went to the keyboard. Let me read what came through me when I said, if you're trying to tell me something, just tell me so that I can understand. This is exactly what I wrote. Teacher of God, that is my name. I have other names, but they are all the same. They mean teacher of God. That is what is needed now, and that is what I need you for. You can write for me. You are doing it now. Write, teacher of God, and help me share the light. There are many who need us. Teach, teacher. That is what you are for. That is why you are here. That is how you will learn. You are the teacher. Don't be afraid. I am with you always. And right after that message came through me, you know, I said yes. But then right after that, this incredible fear came over me. At that point in my life, this was the greatest fear I had ever felt. Now, as I went forward, I felt even greater fear. You know, as other callings came, like leaving my job and moving and that kind of thing. But at this point, this was the greatest fear I had ever felt. And in my house at that time, there was this pretty long hallway. And I remember I just walked up and down the hallway, rubbing my arms, telling myself that I was not going to say no this time. And I just waited for the fear to pass. I just walked up and down the hallway, rubbing my arms, telling myself I was not going to say no this time. And after, I think, a couple of hours, that fear passed. And when that fear passed, I felt guided. Now, I had already had plans that day with Jasmine. It was a Sunday, and we had plans, and I don't remember what they were. But, you know, we always had plans. But I felt guided to change our plans and go to a movie, and I had no idea what movie. I lived in the Boston area at the time, so I went to the computer and I opened up one of these Metroplexes that has like 20, 30 movies running at the same time. And my eyes were just scrolling down the list of movies. And my eyes landed on this movie that I had never even heard of called Shall We Dance? And I heard in my head, that's the one. So I took Jasmine, we changed our plans. I took Jasmine and we went to this Metroplex and we went and we saw Shall We Dance? And through that movie, I received more guidance. One piece of guidance that I received with that movie, because, you know, I had just received this calling to write with the Holy Spirit and teach what I write. And by the way, my profession was writing courses and teaching them. So this wasn't something I didn't intellectually know how to do. of course, I was a brand new spiritual student, and I in no way thought that I, you know, was ready to be a spiritual teacher. I saw myself as a baby, you know, like as a beginner. But I went to this movie, and the first message that I received from the movie was in this scene when Jennifer Lopez, as a dance teacher, is teaching Richard Gere how to dance. She's helping him get ready for an amateur dance competition. And she says to him, don't think. Don't move unless you feel it. And I knew that that was my guidance, that the writing or the teaching that I do was never, ever to come from me. It was always to be purely spontaneous. I would feel the move and just follow the movement. I can repeat that again. The line was, don't think. Don't move unless you feel it. Don't think. Don't move unless you feel it. Hold on, Jamie wants in. Come on in, my love. You want to come in here? Come on in. You can come. I'm going to keep the door closed because the cable guy's coming. But if you want to come in and be with me, you can. That's a good girl. You can't be with both me and Ron. You have to pick one, okay? Because we're in separate rooms with the door closed. That's hard, having to pick between me and Ron. But that wasn't the only thing that I saw in the movie. That's usually the part of the story that I share. I usually, I don't know, you know, if I've ever shared publicly the rest of what I got out of that movie. I know I have shared it with some friends. Maybe I've shared it publicly. I don't remember. But at the end of the movie, the Richard Gere character, who really is my character in the movie, like if you're looking at the movie from the point that I was receiving guidance, my character was the Richard Gere character, and that's where the guidance came from, is his role in the movie. And at the end of the movie, you know, he begins really communicating with people in that he is helping them to drop their facades and getting them all dancing with one another. Because it's a movie about, you know, ballroom dancing. And at the end of the movie, he leaves the dance hall where they all meet. He quits going. He leaves and he returns to his family and he completes the rest of his life with his family. But there's this one scene where he's on the subway, because you can see this dance hall from the subway. He's on the subway, on the train, going home from work. Not really the subway, it's a train. He's on the train going home from work, and he looks up at the ballroom dancing, and they're all up there just dancing and having a blast and completely, you know, completely happy, like they're in heaven. And even though he has left the ballroom dance scene and gone back to his wife, you know, everybody is doing their own spinning, their own dancing. So when I was at the Awakening Together fall retreat in 2016, this strong feeling came over me. And the feeling was, it's time for the end of the movie. I could feel it. It's time for the end of the movie. Which means it's time to get everybody else dancing and prepared for my exit. And gentle healing began 3 months later. And I really do feel like I'm seeing that dancing. You know, although I never wanted to be this way for a long time, and not all of you have been here, but for a long time, Awakening Together has been kind of Regina Dawn Akers centered. But now I really feel like you guys are stepping up to the plate. And although Regina is still helping, guiding, you're stepping into your own. You know, and practicing contemplating and writing with your inner teacher, coming here and teaching from your process, not somebody else's book, but your process, your clarity, your struggles. That's the dance. You know, we're stepping into the end of the movie. And if you look back at that first vision that I had that morning, remember, this all happened in one day. I had the vision and then wrote the message calling me to write and teach and then went to the movie. This was all one day. So if we go back to the vision that I had that morning, you know, which I didn't have clear understanding of until just a couple of years ago, and I went, oh, I might even have been in an interview with someone. I went, oh, I just got it. It might even have been with Rick Archer. I don't know. I'll have to look. But I think I was in an interview with someone when I realized that the passing out of candles, remember the passing out of candles in the vision? I knew there were several ways out of the cavern. The several ways out of the cavern, that's really aligned with Awakening Together's core values, right? We're not fundamentalists here. We're not saying A Course in Miracles is the way, or NTI is the way, or Ramana Maharshi is the way, right? There are several ways out of the cavern. And Awakening Together is open to all of them, so each one can be attracted to what calls to them. But also this Richard Gere helping people to drop their facades and start dancing, right? And Regina, you know, having founded Awakening Together and now leading Gentle Healing, that's the passing out of the candles. I pass the candle to you, but then you take the candle and find your own way out. You see, the dancing and the taking of the candle are the same thing. And so knowing that it's time for that to happen now, right? Knowing, feeling it intuitively, it's time. I am so thrilled. I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to watch you guys step up to the plate and do it. Because I know it's what's supposed to be happening now. So I'm really, really, really excited. And again, I can't come in here and listen to everyone. after Jacqueline moves here, I'm going to start training Jacqueline to take on some of the tasks I do. Then maybe I can start listening to more. What I also feel is that a part of my role in over the next couple of years, I'll say these last 2 years of Gentle Healing especially, my role is to be more mentor. Right, helping people to really dance. And so there's a lot of administrative tasks that keep me very busy. And I'm going to start turning those over to Jacqueline when she gets here. And then I will be able to step into a stronger role of mentor, which is really what I need to be doing now. That, you know, I need my space cleared for that. And then I will be able to come and listen to more of you. and maybe give direct feedback. If there's direct feedback, that would be helpful, right? But even just listening is a great thing for a mentor to do. Just knowing where you're at and being able to support you silently is a great thing for a mentor to do. There's more power in that than you can imagine. So I guess that's my way of saying thank you. Thank you for saying yes. And with that said, we'll go ahead and look at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I remember when we were here last week, I read this question and kind of went, oh my God, okay, we'll do that next week. The question 27 on page 29 is, what is the meaning of brahmacharya? Or I don't know how to say that, brahmacharya. And the answer that is given is only inquiry into Brahman could be called brahmacharya. So I'm going to look in the back here because, again, for those of us who aren't trained in Hindu religion or philosophy, you know, the question nor the answer really says anything. So I'm looking at the back of the book to see what the heck this brahmacharya is in the glossary. And brahmacharya is the state of being a religious student. There we go. The state of being a religious student. So the question then is, what is the meaning of the state of being a religious student? And the answer is, only inquiry into Brahman could be called the state of being a religious student. And Brahman is the absolute, the universal self. So only inquiry into what is truth, what is the absolute, what is the universal self, what am I, when I is pointing that far back. He says only that makes you a religious student. So then leads to number 8. Well, the practice of brahmacharya, which is the four orders of life, means of knowledge. And we'll see if we get anything out of this question. I'm not 100% certain what the four orders of life are, but I think it's things like spending time as a student, spending time as an aesthetic. You know, I think there's like these four progressions from student to sage that the Hindus expect everyone to move through the same four progressions. But I don't know them well, right? But the question is about that. Well, the practice of brahmacharya, which is followed in conformity with the four orders of life, be a means of knowledge. So let's see if we get anything out of this or not. It might not apply to us. We'll see. As the various means of knowledge, such as control of the senses, etc., are included in brahmacharya, the virtuous practices duly followed by those who belong to the order of students are very helpful for their improvement. And you know what? I don't think there is anything in that. Not only not for us, but not for anyone. And I'll tell you why. I know that Ramana Maharshi did not always give true answers to the students, to the people who came before him. If he could tell that a person was limiting the answer, limiting what he wanted to hear, then Ramana gave him what he wanted to hear. It wasn't really Ramana's highest teaching. We've talked about this before. The same thing can happen if you're practicing with your inner teacher. If you ask, you know, the inner teacher a limited question, you know, like, Should I read from NTI or should I meditate now? Right? You're going to get a limited answer. You know, the best way to speak with the inner teacher is, what am I to do now? Completely open. Without an expectation of what the answer is going to be. If you ask a limited question, you get a limited answer. If you ask an open question, you get the best possible answer for you in the moment. And so this is a limited question. You know, because if you look at the question, it says, will the practice of brahmacharya, and then notice, listen to the statement, which is followed in conformity with the four orders of life. You see, this, it's a limited question. I know what happens after you're the student. Then you go to here, then you go to here, right? And so Ramana answers within the limit of the question. But in answering within the limit of the question, there's a clue that this is not his highest answer. That he really is just kind of, I don't know. I want to say repeating back what the questioner wants to hear. Because Ramana has told us earlier that things like control of the senses have no value at all. That type of spiritual practice involving control has no value at all. And here he's saying, well, the various means of knowledge, such as control of the senses, are virtuous practices that belong to the order of students, and so they're very helpful. Yeah, placating the questionnaire. There we go. So I'm just going to flip on. You know, the only thing for us to really get out of that, I think, is to realize that when we're asking the inner teacher or any teacher a question, we want to be as open as possible in our questioning. We don't want to limit the question. You know, that also shows up in the movie Peaceful Warrior, right? When Dan Millman is asking Socrates questions, Socrates says, you need to learn to ask better questions. Now, the next question is still along. In fact, the next couple of questions might still be along the same lines. So let's see if we get anything out of it. Question number 29. Can one enter the order of aesthetics directly from the order of students? So see, this person again is assuming, right? This is the way Hindus do it. We go from, you know, from here to here to here to here. And I don't know if this student, if this person's asking, can you skip a step? You know, maybe there's something between student and aesthetic, some other stage there, because the person is asking, can one enter the order of aesthetics directly from the order of student, right? Ramana Maharshi says, those who are competent need not formally enter the order of students in the order laid down. Oh, sorry. I was trying to translate for you, but it's not working out, so I'm going to skip the translation. Those who are competent need not formally enter the orders of brahmacharya in the order laid down. One who has realized his true self does not distinguish between the various orders of life. Therefore, no order of life either helps or hinders him. Now we have a true answer, right? You know, these orders of life that people go through from one phase to the other phase to the other phase, that's just tradition. That has nothing to do with reality. That has nothing to do with awakening. Oh, Angelica has typed some information for us. Brahmacharya is the student stage. Grihastha is the householder stage. Vanaprastha is the hermit stage. And sannyasa is the aesthetic stage. So this person wanted to know if you could go from the lowest stage to the highest stage directly, right? But Rama is saying, one who has realized his true self does not distinguish between the various orders of life. That's pretty important, because what this is saying is, in the mind of a Hindu person, and I'm sure we have, what is the householder stage? The householder stage is the stage that pretty much all of us are in, where we, you know, we live at home with family. We have a family, and yet we're still practicing spirituality. So we're doing two things at once. Um, So Ramana is saying, actually I lost what I was saying when I answered that, so let me read it again and see if it comes back. One who has realized his true self does not distinguish between the various orders of life. Okay, oh, that's all right. So what is happening here then is, in the Hindu mind, they have a set order of what happens. First, you're a student, right? A spiritual student, maybe a young man. And then you progress to the householder stage, where you marry, but you remain a student. But then at some point, you leave your family and you become a hermit, it looks like, whatever that is, living in a cave, meditating. And then you go beyond that to the ascetic, where you give up everything, even more than you gave up to become a hermit, right? And this is the progression. And so they believe that everyone must move through these stages. And Ramana Maharshi is saying, the one who has realized the self does not distinguish between the various orders of life. In other words, you could be awake and be a householder. You know, and that's maybe shocking to someone who has been trained, that you have these four orders of life. And that means that at some point, if you are progressing spiritually, you will leave your family. And Ramana is saying, one who has realized the self does not distinguish between the orders. You know, you could be awake and a householder. So that's pretty strong teaching to a Hindu. It could be helpful to us, too, if we have any ideas that our family life is in the way of realizing, because this is saying that that's not true. And of course, Ramana Maharshi has told us before that that's not true, that being a householder does not get in the way. But now we understand why he's had so many questions along this line, because Hindus do believe being a householder gets in the way. You got to leave your family at some point. And it's just not true. So one who has realized his true self does not distinguish between the various orders of life. Therefore, no order of life either helps or hinders him. Think about that. No order of life helps or hinders him. So being an ascetic or a hermit is not better for self-realization than being a householder. And being a householder is not worse for self-realization than being a hermit or an ascetic. No matter what your station of life, I'm sure Ramana Maharshi, if he were to continue that answer, would say self-inquiry is the practice, and you can do that no matter where you are. Right? You don't have to be a hermit to practice self-inquiry. And I think I've told you guys that I am at the stage now where, in my own way, I am practicing self-inquiry nearly all of the time. You know, I'm certain there are times when I'm not, you know, like when I'm focusing on work or something, but nearly all of the time. And the way that works for me, it doesn't mean that I'm asking the question, what am I, all the time. You know, that would become very mental, I think, very fast. It means, like, let me give you an example. Just before I came here today, I was at the dog park with Jamie. So while we're at the dog park walking around, I'm looking at the grass, I'm looking at the trees, and I'm practicing the exercise that I recommended last night in gentle healing. I'm noticing their isness, their existence, their presence. I'm noticing my isness, my existence, my presence. And then noticing there's no dividing line between the isness, the existence, and the presence. And I'm doing that the entire time I'm at the dog park walking with Jamie. That, to me, is self-inquiry. So, you know, it seems when I'm doing dishes, you know, I mean, it just seems like all of the time when my mind is not fully occupied in a task, which, you know, when I'm fully occupied in a task, the mind has a job to do and it's doing it. But when I'm not fully occupied in a task, I feel like I am always practicing self-inquiry now. And again, I am clearly at the householder stage. So that's what's important, not where you are physically, where the body is physically, but what you are doing with your time. Right? Are you constantly contemplating truth in whatever way for wherever you are now? Are you constantly contemplating truth? You know, even reviewing these thoughts of awakening multiple times throughout the day and then contemplating them, right? Okay, so Cheryl has asked a really good question. She says, so when you're doing dishes, are you just staying focused on washing and rinsing, etc.? I used to, Cheryl. And that is mindfulness. And I'm sure you're aware of mindfulness. You're in the Buddhist class right now, which is mindfulness comes from Buddhism. So that's where I started, and I've progressed beyond that, so I'll talk about that. But I started there. I started because, you know, what used to happen while washing the dishes is I'm thinking about something else, something in the past, something in the future, right? And so I started with mindfulness. And I started by bringing myself out of the thinking into the present physical moment. So I would notice the warmth. I like to wash dishes by hand. I have a dishwasher, but I actually like to wash dishes by hand. So I would notice the warmth of the water, the smell of the soap, pay attention to like the crumbs as they're getting washed off the plate, you know, and just pay attention to all of that. Anne says she used to think that she didn't want to be washing the dishes. That's a lot of fun. So we've all done that, Anne. But I've progressed from that. But I did do that mindfulness, that bringing my attention to the activity, right, to the sensual experience. But now I think I've gone a step further. So what I do now, and again, I think I kind of play whatever games we're currently playing. So it kind of shifts week by week. So like this week while I'm washing dishes, I notice the existence of the suds or the existence of the plate, right? And I notice my existence, and I notice there's no dividing line. And I focus on existence without a dividing line. On other weeks, I might actually stand there and first, you know, focus on the feelings, the feelings, like the feeling of the warm water on the hands. And then notice that feeling of warm water on hands is within awareness. And then notice the smell of the soap, and notice the smell of the soap is also within awareness. And allow awareness to expand so that I'm noticing the entire activity of a body washing dishes is happening within awareness. You know, it's really just these games that I am teaching in gentle healing. And I call that self-inquiry. So when I say I practice self-inquiry all the time, I don't mean I'm walking around asking myself, what am I, what am I, what am I? Like I said, that would just become, for me, very mental, very quickly. Pretty soon, the mind would know how to just say it. What am I? What am I? What am I? You know? It's actually giving attention to consciousness and awareness and lack of dividing lines and wholeness and all of that to the best of my ability all of the time. And nobody else even knows you're doing it. Right? It doesn't stand out. When you're at the dog park, practicing this, you look just like everybody else at the dog park. When you're at the movies with your family, but you're actually, you know, in fact, I was doing it watching TV. I was actually watching TV this morning while I was eating breakfast, watching the news, and I was noticing the images on the TV and contemplating the fact that those images are somehow, you know, just made from light, from pixels, and yet they look like real images, right? and then contemplating that really, you know, according to the teaching, the images that we look at in the world are also, well, made from light at a higher level, but at a lower level, they're nothing, right? There's emptiness within the atoms. So I started by contemplating that the images on the TV were not real, and then I turned my attention to, you know, the living room, the furniture in the living room, contemplating that it is not real. So, you know, if you walked in, you would have thought I was sitting there eating breakfast and watching the news, because that's what it looks like. But there's actually a contemplation happening in the mind while I'm doing that. The cable guy's here. I don't know if you guys can hear the noise. I have my door closed, but Jamie's in a bedroom now barking, and the cable guy and Ron are up there talking very loud. Hopefully it's not distracting to you all. And what you're doing, Cheryl, she says, I'm noticing the water, the soap, the sink, no thoughts, just awareness. Is this right? Yes, that's a helpful practice. Let me go close one more door because actually they may not be distracting you, but they're a little loud to me. Hi, guys. Oh, yeah. Do we have equipment this time?
Yeah.
Woohoo! I'm just closing my door because I'm working. See you all. No wonder they were a little loud to me. They were just right there. That's good. We got a different guy this time. We had a guy come on Sunday. He was supposed to hook us all up, and I'm not 100% certain he knew what he was doing. So today they've sent another guy. So maybe it will get done. I think I mentioned to you guys, Ron bought a big TV, and it's a 4K TV, so we have to be upgraded to 4K service. Another banging on something. Angelica says, so it seems like the four stages are inner processes rather than outer forms of being, living. Are they different inner ways of approaches to practice? That's a good question, Angelica. You know, Ramana Maharshi said earlier that you become an ascetic by letting go of believing the I thought. And so that would be, in that way, the highest stage, right? And you could say that we move through different stages before we become that type of ascetic that has now even relinquished the I thought. We could be a householder, getting a brand new big TV, you know, with 4K service, right? And still be an ascetic under that definition. Letting go of the I thought. And the hermit would be, I'm sure, the one really practicing in that direction. So, yeah. All right, so there's one more question in this section of the book. Let's see if we get through it, and then next week we can start a new section. Does an aspirant lose anything by not observing the rules of caste and orders of life? That's an interesting question, because you guys know rules of caste are basically what we would call in this country racism, although it wasn't race there. You know, they're all really one race. It's casteism. But it's the same. It's the same, you know, like in Ireland. In Ireland, nearly everybody is white. They don't have racism. But I have noticed that among some people, there's the same type of thinking that we have as racist thinking in this country, but it's religious, right? You know, one religion thinks they're better than the other religion, right? So whether it shows up in religious differences or caste differences, or racist differences. You know, it's the same vein of thinking. In fact, last night we really looked at in Gentle Healing where Jesus recognized he had that thinking in his mind that he was treating the Canaanite woman as different than the Israelites. And he realized, oh, you know, he still had that thinking in his mind and he let it go, right? So it doesn't matter whether you're in a nation with different races or different religions or different castes, you know, people always find a way to divide, right? We always find a way to divide. It's the same type of thought. So the question is, does the aspirant lose anything by not observing the rules of caste and orders of life? Ramana Maharshi says, as the attainment of knowledge is the supreme end of all other practices, there is no rule that one who remains in any one order of life and constantly acquires knowledge is bound to follow the rules laid down for that order of life. If he follows the rules of caste and orders of life, he does so for the good of the world. He does not derive any benefit by observing the rules, nor does he lose anything by not observing them. So I don't know a lot about the rules of caste, but as an example, one rule of caste is the highest caste. What are they called? I forget. It's very similar to the word Brahmin. The highest caste. They are not supposed to eat meat, and they are not supposed to touch dogs. Brahmin, yeah, with an I. You know, that's two of their rules of their caste. They are not supposed to eat meat. They are not supposed to touch dogs. And of course, why not dogs? I don't know. It's a rule. It is a rule. In fact, when I was in India a couple years ago, I was staying with a Brahmin family. And we were walking through India, and there were these cute little puppies. And as I started to bend over and touch the puppies, he said, "Don't do that. People are watching." You know, here I am staying with a Brahmin, and you know, he didn't want me to reach over and touch a puppy because, you know, people would see, right? And he knows I'm staying in a Brahmin home. You know, they would know I'm staying in a Brahmin home. So Brahmins aren't supposed to touch dogs. They aren't supposed to eat meat. And certainly they aren't supposed to touch untouchables. You know, the lowest caste. But the lowest caste is allowed into their home to clean toilets. You know, that can be their servants, that kind of thing. Ramana Maharshi was a Brahmin. A Brahmin, or however you say that, B-R-A-H-M-I-N. Ramana Maharshi was from the highest caste. And to my knowledge, Ramana Maharshi never ate meat. He remained a vegetarian his entire life. So in that particular instance, he followed the rule of his caste. But Ramana Maharshi touched dogs all the time. In fact, to this day, dogs are allowed to wander freely on the Ramana ashram. You know, he touched dogs all the time. And he also, I'm sure, touched untouchables. He allowed everybody into his ashram. He allowed everybody to come. So, you know, he's saying, you know, if you follow the rules of caste, it doesn't hurt. You know, we can pretend a little bit. And let me say it this way. It's pretending. You can follow the rules of caste if you want. I mean, I'm a vegetarian, but you don't have to. Here's my pet dog. You know, I mean, that's kind of what he's saying. It doesn't really, you know, those things aren't important. Quit thinking about things that aren't important. Practice self-inquiry. You know, we have all these rules and ideas in our mind about what's important when it isn't. Be a vegetarian if you want to be a vegetarian. Eat meat if you want to eat meat. You know, have a dog if you want to have a dog. Don't if you don't. You know, don't be concerned about these things. They have nothing, nothing, nothing to do with self-realization. And my particular eating habit, just in case anybody is curious, is that I have a preference for vegetarianism, which means sometimes I eat meat. In fact, tonight I'm going to have meatloaf because Ron's usually not here during the week, but he's here. And I'm going to fix dinner for him. He's here because the cable guy was here. And I said, I can't receive the cable guy on Wednesday because I'm teaching. And so Ron took off from work and he's here to receive the cable guy. That's why he's here. I wasn't willing to give up teaching for the cable guy. So he's here for dinner and he loves bison meatloaf. So I'm making bison meatloaf tonight. So even though I am primarily vegetarian, sometimes it just feels good to eat with Ron what Ron likes to eat, you know? So I say, I don't say I am a vegetarian. I say my preference is vegetarianism. And then when it feels right, I eat meat. Oh, and Cheryl says she would make him her famous tofu dinner. She's never had any meat eaters say they didn't like it. Well, you would have to not tell Ron what it was or he wouldn't even try it. We tease Ron that he's a very picky eater. He eats like 8 things. You know, he eats like 8 things and that's it. He likes turkey pot pie and bison meatloaf and turkey and ziti with sausage. I mean, very, very limited. I can't think of it. So chicken breast, he eats chicken breast, salmon. All right. So, again, the question here about does an aspirant lose anything by not observing the rules of caste and orders of life? And basically, Ramana Maharshi's answer is those things aren't important. Mm-hmm. You don't lose anything by following the rules. You don't lose anything by not following the rules. And, you know, so it's good for us to tune into what is important, which is self-inquiry. So with that said, I am going to let go of the mic, and I don't see Jacqueline here right now. So I know she said that she might be here. She might be a little late, but she might be here. So I'm just going to go check on Ron and the cable guy, see what they're up to, and then maybe I'll listen in on the radio to see if Jacqueline shows up, because I like to listen to her when she's here. Okay, she will be here soon. So I'll tune in on the radio, but I'm going to go check on what the guys are doing. All right, see y'all. Bye. Oh, she's here now? Okay, so Jacqueline, I'll be listening to you on the radio. Bye.